So the meeting's called to order, and we're going to turn it over to Amy for an update on, starting with the audit.
Yes, absolutely. But before I get there, I just want to introduce our new Director of Finance and Administration, Mark Matalich, who joined us 6 days ago. This is day 7 for Mark. And so...
And you keep coming back?
Yes, of course.
So we've been hard at work for the last 6 days and happy to present information to you about all of the financial tasks that we've been undergoing. So first up is the 2021 CSD audit. You may recall that the 2021 CFD audit has been finalized, so this is the last outstanding piece of audits for 2021. And we have removed one more item, and that one was the fluctuations. That's now out of the yellow and into the green. Also, the accumulated depreciation is removed, so we're left with two items that are in the red. One of those is a document that we prepare upon completion of the audit. It's actually called an MDA. And then the other one is the audit adjustment accounts imbalance. That is now reduced from last time at 210 to 123K. So this audit adjustment imbalance was actually the result of efforts about a year and a half ago when the 2021 financial audit began, when they had a differential between the starting balances on the books and the realities in the balance sheet. So in accounting, there are two primary financial statements. One is the balance sheet, and the other is the income statement. And the balance sheet shows at a point in time the values of assets and liabilities. And the income statement shows revenues and expenses. So the balance sheet accounts, as at the beginning of 2021, were not accurately representing what the balances were in those accounts. So what happened is the accounting or the audit management team and staff created these audit adjustment accounts in various areas that just brought the balance sheet accounts into alignment with reality at that date and time, this July 1st, 2020. And then these accounts were just sort of there to be dealt with later. Those were actually to the tune of about $3 million. And those have all been now correctly distributed to either revenue or expense accounts, with the exception of this last $123,000. So staff is going to comb through all of those journal entries, which are in the thousands, to figure out where this $123,000 should go in either revenues or expenses or a combination, therefore, in order to resolve that last bit of sort of, you know, a pile of pile of transactions that just got brushed to the corner as part of that bringing the balance sheet up to speed, or bringing the books up to speed with the balance sheet accounts. So that's the task that's standing between us and a finalized 2021 audit. And we have Mark, who's going to dig into it, and he's going to be assisted by Chris Funakoshi, who's over there, as he's our accountant. And those two have really been digging in deep to Great Plains this week, and they're going to try and resolve this final mystery on 2021. And again, we don't have any evidence of waste, fraud, or abuse. It's just the correct assignment of those amounts into the right expense or revenue accounts. Any questions on the audit?
When do you say you give up, or can you say you give up and just...
I wish the auditors would let us give up. We are kind of hamstrung by a materiality threshold, which is lower than the 123. And so, yeah, it's, you know, to my thinking, on a $10 million budget, $123,000, you could just say that was, you know, ancient history and we got to move forward. But I think we'll give it a go. And if we can't resolve it, you know, by like Thanksgiving, we'll try that again to say just write us up for that. We will already have a qualified opinion because of the fact that items that were contributed to the organization and that should have been capitalized in prior years before 2021 and in 2021, that those were not handled properly. The organization is currently capitalizing those kinds of expenses, bringing them before the board with the resolution. But so that's just going to be something we can't fix. That's going to require some, you know, attention beyond just getting the audit done. But yeah, we're in agreement that for $123,000, we're just sort of stuck. But we'll give it one more try and then see if we can get them to just write us up about it.
Okay. What was the second one here?
The second one is a document that we prepare after they finish, and it's our opportunity to respond to the audit and to explain why things are as they are.
Okay.
Basically, we'll say we weren't here. No. We'll say something a little bit more formal about how, you know, the organization had a rocky fiscal year and that it's under new management and, you know, proceed from there.
Okay.
And okay. Mark, did you want to add anything on the audit? Do you have any comments on that one? I know day seven, so.
Nothing. Yeah, I mean, it's day seven, but just so you guys know, I mean, it's really one item left, like Mimi said, and that second item on there, we'll be able to complete that as soon as item one is sufficiently handled. So it's going to be a one and done.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm going to move on to the next topic, which is financial reports. And what we have before you are a couple of items. One is a budget to actual report through the first 4 months of the 23-24 fiscal year, which shows you that we are operating from our annual budget of 11.2, we're projecting an expenditure level of $10 million, which shows about a $1.2 million underspend, which I understand might be handy for the operations committee to pay for some membranes. So we're pretty confident with that number. And then the details of that are included in these green pages. The summarized year-to-date expenditures total almost $3.6 million, and that is shown according to the accounts in Great Plains, and also include some ACH information for AT&T and then our credit card expenditures. But this is pretty much all the expenditure information to date. So you have a four-pager that summarizes it by those accounts, which are sort of broad categories of expense for the organization, and by fund. The fund is the three-digit number that precedes the string of three sets of segments there. And then if you go to the next report, which says year-to-date expenses through 10/31, that shows you the detail for all of those items. It doesn't show you the vendor, so we actually also have a separate document of the check register that shows you by vendor all the checks that have been written. So the checks that are written is less than the total amount because the payroll doesn't get captured in the check register. That's a separate approach through paychecks. And then also that ACH and the credit card are not paid through the check. And there's one other piece, because these are off by about $100,000, but we'll figure that out. We've been we were here until about 9 last night, and then, you know, are trying to get all these things together. It's been kind of a marathon for us, but we're feeling really confident about the progress that we've made in terms of being able to tell the story of the organization's finances. So for the future budget to actual reports, we talked about last time a tool that was used and presented in December, and that document is actually included as well. It's not filled with any data, right? It's just we want you to weigh in on whether or not this is the right one, the one that you liked, Director Booth, last time. So it's included as an Excel
and
spreadsheet.
And it's on page 48. This is what we saw. This is the document that had been used the whole time that I've been here.
This 48. One just coincidentally shows 22-23 data, or 22-23 as a header, but it really only shows July and August. Did you get it?
Is that attached back here?
Uh-huh. It should be in your first...
In the first packet.
One that I gave you. It starts with the black and white.
I think that's it on the left there. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's...
Okay. It's out of order.
It's right behind the task list from the audits in my packet.
Okay.
Okay.
I didn't have the packet complete when I handed it to you.
Okay.
So this shows revenues and expenditures. It shows across the top the adopted budget, the year-to-date totals, the percentage of budget, and the remaining budget. So it departs a little bit from the presentation that we included on the, you know, cover sheet for the green pages, which actually shows the period budget and the period to date expenditures. And we could do a hybrid of this. And then this shows the various administrative allocations. And then it goes into greater detail. It shows it also by fund in, like, the third page of that document. So we wanted to ask you, you know, what you like about that format and want to see, and if you don't like anything, you know, how we could tweak it to make it a document that would convey most clearly, you know, the information you need for oversight. So, and you don't have to answer today. You can kind of look at it and think about it, and then we can pretty much do anything once we determine, you know, what the preferred format is. But this is the one that we believe was utilized by Ms. Burke in December of 22 at that meeting, and that was, you know, kind of the approach. And then we are very close to being able to download all of 22-23 information and then populating those reports for you so you can see 22-23. For both 23-24 and 22-23, we have some correcting journal entries to make that will assign costs to the appropriate fund. And that is going to take a little bit more work. But we're hoping that we can get that by the December board meeting. So we'll keep you posted on that. But the as we talked about last time, the biggest complexity of the funds in this organization is that there are these six funds, and the costs when they come in, the costs and the revenues when they come in, may be just lumped, and then they have to be distributed to the correct funds. So that's one of our tasks that we have to get to. But we've got a lot of confidence in the overall numbers and have a plan for how to get there. And kind of along those same lines for capital outlay, we have to capture the capital outlay expenses and then report on each of them, and that'll be another thing that we're getting to. We had a lot of discussion yesterday at a meeting about labor cost distribution, and that included how our accounts or our funds are established within our payroll system so as to correctly capture time. And we found that there was an error that was created upon the establishment of our use of the paycheck system, which was that everybody defaults to water. And we've long suspected that water was being overcharged, that most expenses were hitting water. And that is the reason for it, is that all of the staff time and operations defaults to water. So we're going to clear that up so that the other funds that are involved get charged correctly. And then we'll come back with financial reports for these two fiscal years and the CIPs, and that show the money both in the overall and then by fund. So I'm happy to answer any questions you might have about those reports.
So are you saying you're going to take us to the, on 22-23, you're going to take us to the end of the year in this December report?
For 22-23, that fiscal year is closed. It closed June 30th, so we'll show you a picture from July 1st of 22 to June 30th of 23, yes.
Okay. And then are you saying that for 23-24, you're going to produce a report that's similar to 2022-23?
That does what?
You're going to produce it for 23-24. Are you going to produce a report that's similar to this?
Well, we'd like some direction from you about what preferred format you would like.
Okay.
It's possible to do almost anything. That Excel spreadsheet, in my opinion, is a little bit more labor intensive than the green stuff, but we can do a lot in order to mimic that approach.
So the stuff you've done for 23-24, it's all sitting in some database, right?
Yes.
And you need to have some way to make a report. And is it feasible to do something like this, or do we have to think of something else?
We can do something like that. All of those costs that are on the green papers, with the exception of three categories, which is payroll, AT&T, and the credit card charges, which are mainly fuel, are not distributed by fund and by specific account. So under payroll, you might have 100, 200, 250. Those are the funds, right? So it's admin, water, wastewater. So all those distributions have not occurred. We have journal entries teed up and ready to go, but those will take a little bit of time. But we'll hopefully get that all done by December. So then you can see, then what we'll do is pull in the revenue data and show by fund the revenue to expense information and budget to revenue and to expense, right? So you'll be able to see the whole picture. And then all that data is just out there, right? And we'll talk a little bit about Great Plains, but essentially Great Plains is functioning perfectly well. The coding is the big deal on all that stuff. And one of the things that I have to share with you a little bit later when we go into the financial accounting system analysis is that we're contemplating a different payroll system, because we've had quite a bit of difficulty with paychecks. You may recall that they had the vacation accruals and the sick leave accruals that have been inconsistently changing without just sort of automatically because of system errors. And then paychecks as a partner vendor has been extremely difficult to work with. They're not very responsive, they're not very supportive, and they're more expensive than other options out there. So we're exploring a transition to a different approach. And that would enable us to, I mean, we could do this in paychecks as well, but we just don't have as much confidence in their support. But we will clean up the funds and the accounts for each person so that we can pull that information directly out of that payroll system and not have to do extensive manipulations to assign the time to the correct time. And not just the time, but all the corresponding elements of costs that are should be proportionate to those expenses, like the pension contributions, the insurance contributions, whatever, all that sort of stuff. And it can be done automatically if we set it up properly. So that's sort of another plan there. And then we should be in a position like almost every day we could generate a report and say this is the state of the finances.
So you told me about 23, 24, when you report out in December, is that going to be through end of October or the end of November or what?
November. Okay. Because November will have been ended and closed, and we'll meet on December 20th. We could throw in some December time, but it's easier if we just do through November. It'd be 5 months of the fiscal year.
And with regard to the format of the presentation, how would you like to get that information from Steve and I? We would take the PDF of this and mark on it, or what would you like us to do?
Sure, you can mark on it with red pen in paper, or you can do it in a PDF. Whatever kind of feedback you want to give us, we can make it work.
And when do you need that by?
Well, the board meeting the committee meeting is really early in December. And so, and you also have the, Thanksgiving holiday, so we lose a little bit of time there. So I would like it within the next maybe 10 days so that we can figure out how to mimic that format. For the board meeting, there's plenty of time, right? But if you wanted to see it, I mean, we could show you kind of our progress to date in early December, but we definitely would have more time to get it done by the December 20th board meeting.
Okay.
Yes, I have a few comments and then I have a question as well. I'll take a look at this tool that we've discussed before. Mm-hmm. Overall impression, I am comfortable with this kind of report. Because it's what I'm looking for. Basically, each GL shows me what we've spent year to date, and you know, basically lets me know how we're trending at any point of the fiscal year.
Mm-hmm.
And that is lacking in the Green Pages. I have a very detailed report about how we're spending all of our money, but it doesn't then transition to give me a comparison to how do those expenditures for those first 4 months of the fiscal year compare to our budget. Now I know you've given us an overall, but that doesn't tell me, are we doing really well in a couple of accounts and maybe running behind in others? And so that's the closing the loop that I'm looking for. I don't know moving forward myself that I'm interested in all of this detail and all of the checks that are written and all of the expenses. What I'm more interested in is what's our aggregate amount for this reporting period. And I can see that being updated each month.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we can divide 12 by the number of months that we're into the fiscal year and see, and we all know that some of our expenses are more seasonal than others, and so we're going to see some variances that I think are generally easily explained with some of that, but if not, then the board needs to be aware, hey, we're way under or way over budget on a certain item. But I'll take a look and see if there's anything different on that tool that I would like to recommend to you. But as I mentioned before, it's very similar to tools that I have worked with elsewhere, and so I have a comfort level with it because of that. The question that I have is on the summary of CSD funds for the 4 months ending 10/31/23. The period actual shows at $3,267,176. When I flip the page over, The green sheet says $3,574,261. So I'm interested in
so I can explain that. We built the green first, and
this.
The green is the summarized four pager, and then the detail in the 31.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were looking at the projections, and we talked about an expenditure that's included in the detail in the green, that is the almost $500,000 that's for GSRMA, which is our insurer.
Mm-hmm.
And that expense should really be prorated by month, because otherwise what happens is when you get to the annual projected, you're taking that $500,000 as an expense, dividing that by 12, and then multiplying it by the remaining months. So you're overstating the projected expenditures. So we did an adjustment on the period actual to have that component of the GSRMA expense that had not yet actually been costed or expended,
amortized
essentially, for the remaining 8 months. And that is the component that's
but
removed.
But is it paid up front as opposed to monthly?
It is. That's why you're seeing it on the green sheet, because that's a report based on everything we paid for.
Okay.
And then it's why you're not seeing it on the summary tab,
so,
just like Mimi said.
Yeah. So I have to think about that. I'm not sure that I wouldn't prefer to see the almost 3.6 in the tool we just discussed, and the explanation, hey, we have to pay the whole 12-month premium up front, you know, so here's our budget, here's what we've spent, and so we've already spent the whole year's budget because that was an upfront cost. Just something to think about. I'm not sure.
And I completely agree with you. I have to explain that at 8 o'clock last night when we were like, that's not quite right. We've got that in there. Our cognitive capabilities were on the decline.
All right.
And we didn't want to have to go back and redo all the greens because that had already been done. It's not that difficult, but we were, quite frankly, tired. So we left that one in there. Or we pulled that out of the white page in order to not have the projection be overstated from an expense perspective, and just left it in the green. But yeah, you're absolutely right. But there's a concept called cash and accrual accounting. And it's how you determine, you know, what approach you're taking to recognizing expenses. Not to bore you too much with accounting stuff, but essentially cash approach would be to include the $500,000 as part of the expenses, and then the accrual method was what we used on the overview, right? Because that is, we'd only accrued expenses for 4 months, and that's, so anyway, that's kind of the explanation,
but good eye on catching that. Well, and then let me respond to that with a question. We receive property tax revenue twice a year. We're not going to amortize that revenue over 12 months for our reports, right? We're going to show it when it comes in.
We can present the data, however, but you know, typically with the accounting records, you want to match revenue and expense to the period in which it's earned and in which the expense is incurred. So we can decide, though, and that's part of coming up with your preferred format. That Mimi's presented here. So, you know, however you would like to see that, we can footnote certain things like that and say, hey, this is the amount that's in prepaid expense, and we paid it up front. It's going to be amortized out.
And I think just off the top of my head, I think I like that approach. You know, back of my head, there's that IRS principle of constructive receipt rolling around, you know, which applies to the revenue. And to some extent, the reverse of that seems to make sense as well. Like I said, I think it's easy because we're going to have other expenses that are seasonal, and we're going to end up with those being either very low or very high, depending on when in the year we capture it.
Mm-hmm.
And your suggestion, I think, with a footnote, you know, is this is, you know, the high peak of the season, or we present it, which is the verbal comment, to clarify it. So I think we're really on the right track. And like I said, this tool generally, I'll take another look at it, but I'm uncomfortable given our history here, and mine's not very long. I know yours is even shorter and yours is a little longer, but given our history here of presenting information that is inconsistent, that 3.2 versus 3.6 jumped right off the page at me like, uh-oh, but your explanation is perfect. But I think we need to be in a position where we can explain that with a footnote or something right up front.
We'll do.
I think that will, over a very short period of time, really instill some credibility in what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And that's my foremost concern. Get it right, and then, you know, build your credibility so that when we present information to our community, they know we trust it and they can trust it.
That's a great suggestion. Thank you.
As far as whether we just say it in a meeting or put it in a written footnote, the written footnote is a million times better for the historian of the district.
Of course,
we were, right, in 5 years.
Of course.
Yes.
When I'm trying to figure out what they did 10 years ago, because the recordings are lost, the minutes didn't reflect it.
Well, and I think maybe to some extent, Amelia, it depends on which we're talking about. If we're talking about the income tax revenue, you know, the verbal comment pretty much covers it.
Okay.
When we're talking about that upfront expense for the insurance premiums, maybe the footnote makes more sense. Or when we have a really high expenditure for treatment chemicals or something, I think maybe the comment, you know, is, hey, this is our peak season, mm-hmm. and we're going to see it. I mean, I think we can find a balance in there, but I agree with you. Generally, document. And since there's been a problem with that in the past, I think the more we can document probably makes sense. I think I agree with you on that.
Thank you.
With regard to the cash versus accrual, which one's easier for you?
We can do either. It's fine. It's either way. We pulled it off on the overview page because we didn't want to overstate the projections. So, you know, if you take 3 months of data and you say that's 1/4 of the year, if we multiply that by 4, then we're going to kind of get to the point where we think what the whole year's expense should be. That works as long as you don't have any one-time expenditures that are not going to be regular expenditures, which is like this $500,000 annual insurance one. But we can set it up so that we take that into consideration. So it's not a problem. In fact, if we had just gone back and cleaned up the green ones and removed the portion of the expense that had not yet been earned, what's the term for expense?
Recognized.
Then it would have been totally matching. And we went through the overview page twice and to two different things to make sure we were correct on that. And a similar thing exists with regard to the capital improvements, because that's captured in there, and we pulled that off too. And then we actually put in the anticipated remainder of the capital improvement costs that were originally part of that $11.2 million starting budget, which is about 2.2. So we can do pretty much anything, and even with regard to the detail that is in there, that information can easily be omitted and summarized up to a very high level and matched to the budgets without much effort, right, in the system. So we can show you as much or as little detail as you want or need, and cash versus accrual is easy to do. There's another component, and I never know if I'm going to bore you guys with accounting stuff, but this organization has not historically encumbered funds. It has not, when normally in financial systems, if you, like, say, establish a contract with an organization, you will encumber that money to a particular line item in a particular fiscal year, and that way the money sits there for however long it lives until the vendor payments come in. And that doesn't exist here. We're kind of baffled by the fact that it doesn't. But we are going to create encumbrances so that you go back to that concept of matching the expense with the fiscal year in which it was incurred. And so these are just some things we're learning about the financials here that require some fine-tuning, and so we're going to, you know, make those things happen. I would say that what I've seen, you know, people choose cash or accrual depending upon what's ever most beneficial to them. Like from, you know, say like an individual perspective, somebody might prefer to do cash because maybe like the constructive receipt, they didn't actually receive it in 22, but, you know, they received it in 23. Well, don't count it as part of 22, right? So for organizations, in my experience, it's mostly been accruals. You know, I mean, I think the state is an accrual person because and encumbrances kind of follow along that line. You expect that you're going to receive something, and you match that with a particular period, even though there may be an offset on the time when it's actually in hand. But the recognition is during that period. So.
So I, and the last place that I worked managing my own department's budgets. We had the encumbrances, and if we needed to adjust that during the year, then we had to go to the finance department and reallocate, robbing from Peter to pay Paul, so to speak. Again, listening to how you were describing what we did here, on the budget to actual, when I take the period budget at 3.7 and change and multiply it times 3, I get the 11.2 and change for the annual budget. Uh-huh. However, when I take the 3.2 and change and multiply it times 3, I only get 9.8, not the 10 million that is showing in the annual projected.
And the reason for that is that from the 3.2, we took out the in order to make the projection, we took out the $525,000 that was paid for CIP, and it's you'll find it in about 11 different places, I think, throughout the green pages, because it's spread in all these different components. Then we said, okay, what's that figure, which would be pretty much just the operating expenses, divided that by 12 and multiplied that by 4 to come up with, or I'm sorry, multiply that by 8 to come up with the remaining projected annual expenses, and then added back in $1.7 million, which is the residual of the CIP budget, which if you remember that, I know this is a long time ago, but the $11.2 million budget had a $425,000 line item for the water studies, and then a $1.8 million component for CIPs, and that's 2.2. So we basically said, okay, of the 2.2, 500 has already been spent, and so 1.7 is remaining. And then we then the calculation was 1.5, and that's the 200,000. I forget the 1.5 is what the projection would have been if we just took it at the 500 times, you know, 3 for the our calculation. I'm sorry, it was only 12 hours ago, but you know, but we did it many times. We're like, yep, that's right.
So thank you for that complex explanation, and maybe you just gave me my strongest argument for the tool, which is, here's the budget, here's how much we've spent, that's the percentage of the budget. And then with the footnoting, we can understand why we've spent 90% of this GL item after the first quarter of the year, as opposed to having to try to...
What I'm explaining to you is that sometimes straight line amortization or projection of costs is insufficient.
Right. Yeah.
But always going to have some nuances with projections.
I understand, but that's why the projection is maybe less important to me than where are we percentage-wise against our budgeted amount at this point in the year. And if we're a third of the way through the year and we've spent two-thirds of our budgeted amount for that GL, okay, my projection is at that point we're going to go over, unless you give me a footnote that explains why I've spent two-thirds of my budgeted amount. Does that make sense?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I like that idea. Have you ever seen RMA's budget to actual reports?
No.
They actually do exactly that.
Okay.
They tell you
why we're over
here or why we're under there. And it's usually only a few lines in each department.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just a few lines. Just the key points of what it is. But I'm afraid of making this too complicated.
Right.
And that's why I asked you which way is easier to do. But because those little steps take a lot of time.
So cash would not have any little nuances about removing it and explaining it, but your projections would be overstated, your projected expenditures. So you kind of have to remove it if you want to have high integrity data, mm-hmm. right? And so what I'm thinking is that producing an Excel spreadsheet like that can require a lot of manual manipulation, mm-hmm. because all Excel requires that. But we have the data in the system that we can pull out and drop into a database and then create a layout that just will take that data and present it readily, right? And show the budget side that allows, you know, for that. And then we can do footnotes on the bottom of those documents to kind of capture all that information. Mm-hmm. What I think probably, well, I mean, I think there's a couple of historic things that happened here. The loss of qualified accounting personnel that led to the loss of institutional knowledge about how the system, how the Great Plains system worked. And then also, you know, the fact that Excel is time-consuming. It can require a lot of manipulation, especially if you have multiple worksheets that aren't, you know, tied together or that are tied together that you can have a ripple error through. And so that's where I hang my hat on the power and potential of a database, which is what we're trying to do. And I think it'll probably be sort of a combination of things, because Great Plains does have the ability to generate reports, but they can't do everything. Like if we get down a little bit further in the conversation, we'll talk a little bit about the financial institutions that we have. So not all of that information is currently captured in Great Plains, but if we want to pull information from a variety of different sources, we might cobble it together inside the database by doing these imports, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But the goal is actually to have it be as streamlined as possible. So you can just push a button. You pull in the information. That takes about 30 seconds. The system is all established so that it can find and sort and present in the particular layout that we choose. And we can, you know, make that happen really readily and accurately with a lot of confidence.
Well, the
place where a projection, in my mind, becomes important is where we have expenses on a GL that we did not anticipate to a certain point in the year, and we have truly, on a cash basis, spent a larger percentage of the budgeted amount than we anticipated at that point in the year.
Right.
And again, but that percentage line is going to show us that. And it seems to me that you all have the wherewithal to know if we're 33 1/3% into the fiscal year and we've spent 75% of a budgeted item because of unanticipated expenses, you're going to come to us and say, hey, look at this item. This is a problem for us. And at some point, we're going to have to reallocate, either out of reserves or move some things around. And that's exactly how our finance folks handled stuff over at SAC-RT. I didn't get so much into the budget stuff at the state. All I was doing was going to finance and say, how much can I negotiate in the contract? Give me a bottom line, give me the... But no, I agree. I think we're on a good path. So
and
I'm encouraged. Thank you.
And one of the things you'll see is that there's no detailed budget information in this report, right? You just have the 11.2. So the next step is to load the budget in mm-hmm. by fund, right? And then you match those expenses, and at a really high level, right? 100, what's the budget? This is mm-hmm. the expenditure. Mm-hmm. And that way, then, it becomes the burden of each manager of each unit to be checking their budget to the actual expenditures, and then you can see where, you know, you might have a big over expenditure or a lower. So that's where your management oversight and control comes into play. So you're absolutely right. And so really, it's just that it has taken us this long mm-hmm. to get to this data, but now there are all these other elements that right. we'll be weaving in. So we're getting there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. So go to the next one.
Okay. So as I said, 22, 23, and capital outlay, we're going to get you next time. Then moving on to item number 4, the financial management policies and objectives. We have some work to do in this area because nothing has been done for some time, but we're going to be coming back to you at probably the next meeting with a complete listing of all the financial institutions and their balances and the interest rates that we earn if they're banks. So if we can go to the slide with the wheel of the banking institution. So part of this has been kind of a forensic effort to figure out where all the district's funds are and getting authority for those funds established. And for many of them, that exists already, except for like LAIF and maybe CAMP. But they require, at least LAIF requires a resolution from the board. And you may recall, I think it was 2 meetings ago, before we had finalized the new director of finance and administration, a resolution was on the agenda, and it was tabled because we said we would wait until we had the name of the individual. And so now it's going to come up in the board meeting on the 15th, and then we'll get that established. But you can look at this wheel, and you can see there are many, many different institutions that are out there. And I'm just trying to get to
what do the three acronyms represent, please?
LAIF is the Local Agency Investment Fund that the state treasurer manages. PARS is the name of a financial institution. It's something retirement system, but it's for the OPEB. Do you remember the other mm-hmm. post-employment mm-hmm. benefits? So PARS is, it's probably something associates retirement system. I can't remember. But it is the place that the OPEB money is in. And then CAMP is a California, some kind of low risk California governmental fund.
Okay.
Okay, so included in this wheel is the U.S. bank credit cards, and we're going to be reviewing the quality, I guess, of that institution. There's another institution that has a 1% cash back on all of our credit card charges, so we're going to check that one out, and we're looking at a corresponding money market at the other bank as well that offers a higher rate than LAIF. So we're checking all of these things and trying to figure out how to both streamline our financial activities, because to the extent that you have, you know, a dozen or more, you have to reconcile all those and keep tabs on all those. So we want to make sure that what we have in interest-bearing accounts is as good as we can get, so that we have that as a revenue generation source rather than just raising rates. We're trying to, you know, there's 2 ways to bring in money. One is to raise rates, and the other is to actually make the existing reserves work for us. And we want to try and be as conscientious to the ratepayers as possible by making the resources that are on deposit work for the organization. So that, you know, may be consolidating, you know, some of these different institutional accounts. Any questions on the approach there? There was an investment policy, and we'll be revisiting that. It probably won't be until January or February just because of the other workload, but that's something that's out there. Okay. Mark, did you want to add anything on that, or is that pretty much the topic?
I think that covers it, yeah.
Okay.
There was an attempt a while back to rewrite our reserve policy. Mm-hmm. Is that on the table?
Yes, that falls under this category, the investment policy and the reserve policy. And we responded to the grand jury report that until we got the audits closed, we had to hold off on our reserve policy. But I think if we get 2021 done, definitely by the end of the year, then we get 21-22 teed up, and I figure 22-23 we can get finalized by the end of 24, and then we're in a position where we tackle that reserve policy. But I mean, as a heuristic kind of rule of thumb, what I have in my head is what the grand jury stated was we have 10 and we need 20, right? So that gap of 10, but we will be doing a more kind of fact-based approach after the Lumos people finish their assessments of our current assets and capture the useful life of those so that then we can generate a 5-year report, a 10-year report about replacement costs for different items. And then we'll know what money is needed in the near future and then in the longer future.
And I appreciate that. I have a sense that the grand jury figure was fairly arbitrary.
I agree.
In their identification of that amount, and having sat in and listened to the Improvements Committee meeting this morning and some of the short and midterm expenditures that we're expending, and there was some discussion about funding some water treatment plant components out of reserves, it's critical that we know what those reserves are, you know, and that was the committee sort of dumped that onto this committee to figure that out. But I don't think we can do that until these audits get rounded up.
Yeah, I mean, we're closer. We'll do, you know, we'll come back with, you know, this wheel of all these different financial institutions. We can show you what is actually in those, you know, and that you don't need the audit for. But the thing that I think is sometimes overlooked on reserve, both obligations and amounts, is that those reserves are held in reserve for anticipated future expenditures, which could come tomorrow or they could come in 20 years. And so you're never going to know. But certainly having enough in a rainy day fund like that for future is critical for any organization so we don't get stuck. So our goal is to have certain knowledge about what we have on hand and know which of that is restricted. Like, for example, we have that $540K that we owe to, right, you know, the developer. Right. Eventually, we're going to put that in a do not touch bucket. And then we'll be able to see, you know, what our needs are from the Lumos thing. And then we'll be able to kind of know, okay, well, some of this we could put in a longer term, higher interest earning kind of place. But we would have it, you know, not so much just like operating in the dark. We would see specifically what we're expecting that we have to pay going down the road and have a cushion for these unanticipated things that might pop up.
I know when I reviewed that reserve policy that was considered earlier, there was one thing that stuck in my mind, was that it's not obvious from looking at our balance sheet where we have all these funds what they actually meant. So some, like you said, some are you can touch, some you can't touch.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
Even if you change the name of them so we can identify which you can touch and not touch.
Yes, you'll see that.
And
yeah.
They were going to make the reserve policy state which what the name was for these things and what you could touch and not touch. So if you were to fix the names so we could obviously see which ones are available or not available to be.
Yep, that'll be done. For example, LAIF, that broad category of LAIF,
yes.
That actually has like 10 sub-accounts,
yes.
Right? So when we show you this information, it'll be much more detailed in terms of like the do not touch and the okay to use kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we'll lay it all out for you to see. Okay. Oh, Michael has a question.
Just to mention also, now that we're on the subject, once we get that capital improvements program complete with Lumos, the segue will be the cost of service analysis is the other portion of that contract. And a lot of the great work that you guys are doing will allow that to be fruitful, and we'll be able to get a good planning analysis moving forward.
And that's actually a good segue to the last topic, which would be jumping a little bit ahead, but we'll come back to this thing in the middle. But we have down here for the 24-25 budget things that we're going to be working on to get there, and those reports that Michael was talking about will feed into the service rates, right? And then we're doing a separate review of the indirect cost allocations, that indirect cost rate analysis. And so that'll be part of what drives 24-25 to be able to know, you know, what resources we expect and what revenues we expect and what needs we have for that year.
Do we know when that's supposed to be completed?
The
cost allocation?
Michael, you are managing that contract, the cost allocation?
I think at that point, I think we were going to potentially do a cost allocation study along with the cost of service analysis. I think that was going to be a portion of that, but I do not believe that Lumos is engaged to do the cost allocation. Are we talking about the admin cost allocation?
No, I will do that in the next couple of months, probably, hopefully the next three or four weeks, because there already was an indirect cost rate study. I don't know if that's the same cost analysis that you're talking about.
No, I was thinking about the administrative cost allocation.
Okay, yeah.
I thought we did hire them to do that.
No, I'll check the contract, but it was my recollection that they were hired to part A, the 20-year CIP for the infrastructure, and then part B to form the cost of service. So basically letting us know what the rates need to be to support the CIP. And I remember there was some back and forth. Oh, should we put the cost allocation study in there? Oh, we already have one. So I don't believe that. I'll check on that.
And if I could just clarify, when they do an analysis for cost of service, they're looking at the operations side, and then we have to do the administrative cost allocation, which would distribute to each of the different enterprise funds their proportionate share of the administrative costs. So it's that. That would be a piece of their cost of service component. But that, Mark and me, and I think Chris is over there, we'll probably pull him in to help out with that as well, to be able to take that administrative cost bucket and figure out what proportion of it goes to which of the different enterprise funds.
So we're going to do that in-house?
In-house for now, yeah, because it's the quickest way to go. It's usually not an overly complicated process. But
I think the key is just establishing what criteria we rely upon.
Yep, there's usually a cost driver, so we have to figure out what our cost driver is and then what the costs are and have a good handle on that. So I don't know if that answers your question or muddies the water a little bit more.
I was under the impression we hired it out, but if we're doing it in-house,
we did hire it out last time. Like, I think the document that I have is 2019 or 2020. Yeah. But that one, that is the one that has a really big load on the security budget, and it's been kind of mystifying to many people about why. So it goes back to, like, what was the driver, right? And so then that's what we want to look at, because really creating an indirect cost rate is not hugely complicated. I mean, some people can make it hugely complicated, but in general, it's that you have a driver, a cost driver. Sometimes it's like number of people, number of, you know, FTE positions, or it could be dollars in a budget, you know, something like that. But we'll take a look at it and then come up with it. And that, you know, kind of ripples into other different areas because it could diminish the overall cost for some enterprises.
You think that service rate study is going to be done by the time we need it?
What's the timing for the 218 process? Is it March?
Yeah, we have to have out, like the last week in March, the notification of what we think our rates are going to go up.
Okay, and what's the timeline?
To have them effective July 1st.
Yes, exactly.
I think they'll, you know, once they finish the CIP, we'll need the, once the audits are complete, then they'll be able to get right on it. I had a schedule based on, like, if we got the audit by this such and such a date, and I can get that to you, maybe.
But if you're talking about audit, are you talking about all the audits, or are you talking about 2021?
Just enough to where we have a good idea what our fund balances are.
Okay, for current year. For current year?
Yes.
Okay.
And, you know, and they talked about, you know, if we can't get that by the, you know, enough time before March, you know, you can always do budget in October. You know, there's different times to and different timings.
So. Well, we'll do the budget still, I think, for July 1st, but then the rate increase wouldn't happen until
correct, March. Yes.
So what I'd like to do is have a 24-25 budget by, like, March 15th so that we can at least get a sense of where we're at, regardless of what the Lumos work might present in terms of longer-term CIP needs.
And then there's a special board meeting for that. Well, or if you're going to have it March 15th, then we can have it at the regular board meeting this year. And then the board approves us mailing out the Prop 218 notice.
There's a couple of pieces, you know, that are falling in. We have the audits. Then we also have the Integrated Water Master Plan. What infrastructure comes out of it? Those will both feed that CI, that 20-year cost of service analysis.
Well, I was going to wait till director comments, but since we're talking about budget, an elephant in the room, residual for the last 2 years, is security. And you mentioned, Mimi, you know, the allocation. And again, because the criteria is unclear to me, and I did go back and look at the last allocation study, I can come up with a variety of ways to allocate that. And the easiest is, you know, what's the percentage of employees, you know, and how does that equate? And security is a large percentage of our workforce. But we know that we're on borrowed time with security currently. I am concerned that the security committee hasn't met now for a number of months. There are some things going on over at RMA that we've talked about in other contexts. Mimi, as you know, there was an incident over the weekend. It just rekindled in my mind the need for a meaningful dialogue between leaders at CSD and leaders at RMA about what our security force should be providing and is able to provide in the way of service. It's funny, in my own home, my wife and I argue about this. We disagree over, and of course, she's lived in the community longer than I have. She raised her kids here. You know, she's one that really favors a more full service approach to security that I keep telling her, that's great, but we can't afford it. And so in the context of this finance committee meeting, I hope that we begin to have some serious analysis about security and what we're going to be able to provide in the next fiscal year. Because I'm envisioning as the costs increase, and are they covered by the labor contract, the security employees?
Absolutely.
You know, so we don't really have any room to incur costs. We're already short-staffed. And we certainly don't have time, in my opinion, now to put forth another measure to raise money. So I think we're we've got some really serious discussion that's going to have to take place, and I'm concerned that the Security Committee isn't already performing some of this detailed analysis. I know Kelly started that a while back at my request in terms of the services we provide, you know, to the community. The issue over the weekend was something as simple as the restroom doors being locked at Stonehouse and Riverview, and there being big soccer tournament this week, and people couldn't gain access to the restrooms. And apparently, historically, our security force has locked and unlocked the restroom doors at the parks. I question why we're doing that since RMA owns the parks. And then, to compound the problem, not only do we not have a security person on staff Saturday for patrol that could go out and unlock the doors, when our security gate people tried to call RMA, they have an after-hours emergency number. Nobody responded. So I just, again, in terms of looking forward on finances, I think we really need to have security making an assessment now of what they're doing, what it costs, and come up with a plan to trim back some of those services and make it known to the community we can no longer provide. I mean, we need to tell them we're not there on Saturdays to unlock the bathrooms. And the answer is Rod's decided, okay, we'll just leave them unlocked Fridays and Saturday nights. And I'm concerned about
vandalism.
What problems that's going to portend. But again, from the finance perspective, I hope we're having that discussion very soon.
We've bitten off a lot of the apple, so I don't want to have us choke too much on what everything that's going down. But my quick and dirty solution to people having to gain access to a restroom or to have security go around to 30 different places where they lock and unlock on a regular basis is to, one, maybe make keys available to different entities and they could pick up the key at the gate when they come in to use the park, or we could issue fobs and transition over to key cards, and then the fobs could be just sacrificed if they don't come back and deactivated. So I think there are lots of ways that we could, you know, slice the apple in order to achieve whatever the goals are. And so I have not been to an ad hoc committee meeting, but I understood it to be, okay, well, what do we need? What do we want? And then what can we afford? And so I think that, you know, we will definitely be looking at how we can address those things. We're looking at the indirect cost rate, trying to figure out how to lighten the burden on security. And part of the effort there is not only figuring out whether the indirect cost rate was applied in a reasonable and fair and appropriate manner, but also shrinking the administrative costs in general, right? Because those got a little bloated, and so we've consolidated a position, and we're trying to cut costs wherever we can, you know, removing different expenses, and then that will, like for example, the great a global search, you know, that was $1,000 a month. There are other things that we're thinking we can do that more cheaply, even this different payroll system, right? And if you start with a bucket that's really big, no matter what your indirect cost rate distribution is going to be, it's going to be burdensome. If we shrink that bucket, then that helps overall to get the security budget down to within the resources that are available. And so it's definitely on the radar. Right?
Well, I appreciate that. And I mean, just anecdotally, Rod, part of Rod's solution is similar to what you just suggested, and that was he was going to issue keys to the restroom to the leaders of the baseball and the soccer organization so they can open and close them themselves. And I mean, that's simple enough solution.
And you know, Stephen, back to the fobs. You can lock and unlock it on your phone.
Yeah, I mean, but again, therein lies part of our challenge. And I know, having attended a couple of those ad hoc committee meetings at RMA, the focus of that committee is providing security behind the two gates. And that those committee members, and rightfully so, don't have any interest in what the security needs are for the rest of the community, which has grown significantly over the last few years. I think will continue to grow out here, both in terms of residential and commercial properties. And we, under Measure J, have to be responsible for all of that. And I think that they're trying to come up with a plan for them to be responsible for security behind the gates. And that just raises a whole lot more questions that I don't know that are going to be able to be addressed by the time we get to the budget. But this issue of security and funding it and providing services, again, in addition to looking at the allocation, which I know the community questioned largely last year when the measure was out there, and the kind of analysis that I've been suggesting, I think had it been performed last spring, we might have had a different result on that measure. It's evident to me that we were subsidizing security with a tremendous percentage of our unrestricted property tax money, and the leadership, I think, appropriately decided we can't continue that. The grand jury echoed that, so the question is, okay, now what? And the question that I have, and it may be such a de minimis impact that it doesn't matter, but I've been arguing for a while, are there some services that our security force has incurred responsibility for over the years in the interest of community relations and good neighbor interaction that we should be charging somebody for in order to be able to pay for? I'm not serving on the security committee. I'm not in a position to necessarily, work it from that angle, but I think from a finance committee angle, we're going to have to do some of that. We're going to end up, quite frankly, with all we're going to be able to do is staff the gates. And there won't be any other security services outside of that, as I see where the money's going.
I would echo that, but I think we're going to need to reduce the services with regard to RMA. And we've talked about renegotiating the contract, and we could do that.
The only thing they're paying us for is the parking enforcement, and we do a lot of other things that if we were to renegotiate the parking agreement to a value that actually pays the staff time,
and then
add in all these other little ancillary things and propose to them, look, here's the list of things we're able to do, here's the cost factor, and maybe, like I said, it may be de minimis where it doesn't result in us being able to hire additional patrol officers. I don't know. But that's kind of our key right now, is we're only staffing 2/3 of our patrol shifts currently.
They could hire more compliance people if they wanted to.
Exactly.
To do exactly what we've been doing.
Exactly.
I think we need to cut those services myself, but the board's going to tell you what they want.
Yeah.
So, eventually.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of discussion yet to come on the security issues, and we had a conversation about this in the course of our conversation about the labor cost distribution with regard to security and how little we recover from them. And then just as far as, my suggestion regarding key fobs, we actually are locking and unlocking the U.S. Postal Service, which is a federal agency. So I sat down with the postmaster and suggested that they also get a key card approach that could be, monitored remotely, and we wouldn't have to have a patrol officer who has to make a little swing over and lock and unlock over there, right? So she was receptive to that, and she's checking into it. A lot of these things were sort of grandfathered in, and nobody really knows why they do it like that, but that's how they've done it. So this is an opportunity for us to be like, all right, this is the list of services. If you want this, we're going to charge you this, or we're going to recommend that you choose a smart approach that uses technology so that we don't have costs that are associated to it, and everybody can get in to go to the bathroom when they need to go to the bathroom. So I think there's a lot of work yet to be done on that.
I think we're still locking up the clubhouse over at the Villages.
Yes, that's true, too.
And so the same approach. And again,
yeah,
that little piece by itself is just so de minimis, you know, that the value of stopping it economically, but again, what we haven't done is an analysis of the cumulative impact of all those things that we do.
Yeah.
And, you know, security being responsible for going to our facilities on patrol and spending more time there, I think certainly, you know, is of interest. But, I mean, I've been questioning since I got appointed to this board, you know, the amount of time that we spend enforcing the traffic laws behind the gates.
Yeah.
And people like having a sense of security, I use that intentionally, with patrol officers that can respond to circumstances. Some of the requests in my mind are inane and inappropriate. And I think we just need to do a complete assessment. And as Martin says, we probably just need to start scaling back on some of those feel-good things that we're doing in order to maintain our ability to meet our costs.
And not to beat a dead horse, but I would just remind the committee members that when we established the 23-24 budget for security, we agreed to just reduce their overage from the property tax revenues for security by $250,000, and then take the next 250. The total overage was about 500K, so we made a reduction of 250K for 23-24 with the plan to go another 250K lower in 24-25 so that the funding for the security matched what the receipts were for the security property taxes.
And so before you negotiate a contract, that further reduction wipes out patrol.
Unless some other things happen.
Right.
Okay.
I do have a public comment if you're accepting comments, if this is a good time.
On this topic?
On this topic.
On this topic. Okay.
Can we wait till item 7 here?
We'll just come back and discuss this later.
I just wanted to bring up the issue of the water treatment plant maintenance that got brought up in the...
We're on...
On the budget for 23-24. The...
Or 24-25, or current year budget?
No, 23-24.
Okay.
I'm going backward.
Okay.
But there is a need to replace some modules in the water treatment plant. And all I'm asking is if you could provide us something in the next board meeting for the board to take action on how we could pay for those modules. And there's two options. One, just to buy 15 modules. The other one is to look forward to buying additional modules in the next fiscal year. But it would require some money to be paid as a down payment for those that purchase. But they're getting dangerously low in modules.
And
I think there's ways to pay for it. There's money in the reserves. There was a line item in the reserves that Mike did a while back that actually had $800K to be spent in 2023. But I don't think we will that much. If you could bring something to the board.
And how much are the modules roughly a piece? Are these 20,000 or?
It was 28K plus for 15 modules.
Okay.
So as an observer to the improvements committee meeting, Michael and Travis both have invested a lot of time researching it and presented some options to the improvements committee. So depending on how many you order and how long you can wait to get the prices vary, and there's different approaches. So,
but we certainly don't want to run out of them.
No.
Yeah, and those are the membrane modules for the manganese issue?
They got damaged by the manganese, but but they need to be replaced when they're damaged. And,
I mean, I think given, you know, that we showed you that we're expecting a 1.2 million residual for 23-24, we could definitely come back and propose an augmentation to the operations budget to cover the cost of 15.
Or take it out of reserve.
I think I'd like to leave the reserves as they are, because whatever we don't spend in operating, we'll deposit into reserves, you know, going forward. Our goal is to build those up. But, and I haven't seen a reserves budget. So you referenced the 800K that's in there, but I think that'll be something we rebuild as well. But I think if they need these and if they can store them, you know, so that they're available for use whenever they're needed, then, you know, we can add it to their budget.
Okay. Thank you.
And then I jumped over item 5, so I don't know if we're ready to go back to that.
Sure.
Okay,
so this item, the financial accounting system analysis, I just want to talk to you a little bit about this, because over a year ago, I'm not exactly sure when, maybe a year, year and a half, there was an RFP and a proposal that was received and a commitment to Tyler, or a contract, I should say, for Tyler to provide an improved utility billing system and a brand new improved financial accounting system. And so one of the things that we're doing right now, this is again day 7 for Mark, is evaluating the efficacy of Great Plains and determining whether or not that system, which we pay about $4,500 per year just for maintenance, is enough, or if we need to switch to the Tyler financial system, which would cost us some dollar amount for the upfront implementation and then an ongoing cost in the 55 to 60K per year range. And our preliminary assessment is that Great Plains is a fully functional financial accounting system and that we could make it work. And we'll be continuing to assess that. There are some elements of the system that we can improve, and mostly it's interactions with other related systems. There's a system called Estiva, which is our AP module, accounts payable module. It's the procurement. And that Estiva does not interface directly with Great Plains, so that requires either Sneakernet connection or some intermediary that pops the data in and out. And there are other applications that we could replace Estiva with in order to be able to have that functionality all under one roof for Great Plains. And then, in addition, the chart of accounts that's utilized in Great Plains is actually over complex. It's got about 2,000 different accounts, and we can probably make do with about 500. That's not a huge deal, but when you're talking about having an accounting system that is more readily understood by many, having or being able to jettison a lot of those unnecessary accounts that don't pertain is very helpful just in terms of the ability to discern the information clearly. And then finally, as we mentioned before, the current payroll system was not established correctly and in line with our various funds and special accounts. And so all of those proportionate expenses that follow people's time, like pension cost and insurance, those are not easily prorated through paychecks right now. And that has to have some manual intervention and manipulation to assign those costs where they need to go. If we transition to a new system, or if we are successful in getting paychecks to fix their system, we would be able to more easily have all of those costs rolled into the general ledger in the appropriate funds. Right now, what you'll see on that green page is that we just did a plug for the payroll costs, and they're not distributed by fund until we do those journal entries that we discussed. So there are a lot of fixes that we have in the wings that I think are going to make Great Plains be fully functional. And so I think, you know, for now, we're probably just proceeding down this path. And then we can revisit this issue of whether we go forward with Tyler or not. But I think the three of us who were, you know, kicking the tires over the last week are pretty happy with the system. You know, it's doing what it's intended to do, and it operates pretty much how a general ledger and an expense and revenue system should be operating, and we can deal with it.
What about its ability to generate reports?
Yes, it can generate reports, and we can actually work with our consultant to specify the types of reports, and we can also export data and put it into a different format, anything we want, pretty much. Yeah.
Have you got billing under control?
Billing, I think, is under control. Chris, I don't know if you want to weigh in on billing. I think we're much better off than we were in May.
Much better off than we were in May, but we're in the process of adding a bunch of new accounts. So I think that those accounts will be finished adding for this period, but I'm not 100% sure about that. But I'd say that besides that, billing is under control.
Great, thank you. Mm-hmm. Are we off to number 7?
Yeah, unless, Mark, did you want to add anything on the accounting system? Any the thoughts as a newbie?
No, I mean, I think that covers it. It's really just a matter. It's not so much that the accounting system, the GL package, isn't functional. It's more all the peripherals and subledgers need to interface with it. And I think that's been the issue. And so, like Mimi said, that's what we've been looking at, and we're coming up with different solutions for that. And once we do that, then we should be off to the races, and it should be a lot more streamlined process. And to dovetail back to the reporting topic, I mean, once we have the system set up that way and it's functioning properly and everything's interfacing in, reporting should get a lot easier also, because the information is just going to be in there, you know, timely. So.
Okay. So let's hear from Richard.
I do have a public comment, number 42.
My comment actually pertains to a couple agenda items ago, and I don't really understand why I had to wait till public comments. But anyways, I don't mean to get into the weeds too much, but when you were talking about security and the village and unlocking the clubhouse, I'd like to point out that they actually have a contract for that, and they pay for it, so it's not like, you know, just voluntarily agreeing to unlock the restrooms. You know, there is a contract and the village pays for it. So that's all I have
Mimi,
to say.
Can you research that and confirm that for
yeah,
us?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll do that. Thank you for letting me know.
Thank you.
I might be able to point you to the agreement on the website.
Okay. Yep. I'd appreciate that.
I can't guarantee it, but
okay.
I should.
Appreciate it.
Thanks.
All right. We'll find out.
Steve, or this is staff, you guys any other comments? No? Steve, you have any comments?
No, I don't. Thank you. I think it's been a very productive meeting. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for updates on all this. There's a lot of information to take in, but did a good job of telling us what's going on. So thank you.
Our pleasure.
We're done.
Thank you. Adjourned at 11:29.